States Senator Rodin, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And I want to start with the same question I've been asking all of the Republican candidates. Why did you choose to run for office?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, my wife and I were approached over a year ago in July, a year and a half ago, and we spent 12 months, almost exactly a year before we made the decision. And I think what it boiled down to for us was just what's at stake for our nation and state right now, given the situation at the national level. And obviously I felt that I had the values and was equipped to be an effective leader for this state and for our nation at the federal level.
If I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves correct, you grew up West River, right? Right around Union Center?
Yep.
Is where you're at now?
Lifelong, right there. The ranch is just a mile west of the little town of Union Center, which is about 45 miles east of Sturgis.
And you're a South Dakotan that served for several years in the legislature as well.
14 years in the legislature. I served 8 years in the House, the last 4 years as the House Majority Leader. And this is my sixth year in the State Senate.
What is your experience, do you think, as a West River rancher? What will you bring from that to Washington, and how you use that to represent South Dakotans?
Well, you know, I think that it's there's a lot of talk about conservative, who's the most conservative, and different people have different views on that. You know, I think it's more than just words for me. Those are the values that I grew up on. You know, the sense of great rights and liberties and freedoms that our country has to offer, but also the inherent understanding that with great rights and great freedoms comes great responsibility. And I think that's part of the equation that's been vacated at the federal level, that somehow our federal government thinks that they know better how to take care of people. And so that our rights have been eroded under the guise of providing more service at the federal level. Completely moving away from the sense of limited government or the original intent of our Constitution, where the powers of the federal government are few and limited, and I think we've seen we've completely turned our back on issues like state rights with the expansion of the federal government. I think Obamacare is one of the biggest examples of that. A huge expansion of federal government, the role and scope of government, and one of the planks I stood on is to reduce the size and scope of our federal government.
The White House just today, a few minutes ago, came out with the number of 8 million Americans, they say, are now insured under Obamacare. There are those who argue that even the Democrat in this race, that Obamacare is here to stay. And maybe things can be done to fix it, but it's not something that can be or should be easily repealed, given that so many people are now involved and signed on to the program. I want to give you a chance to respond to what.
Well, first of all, before we get into the numbers, it doesn't matter if it's 8 million or 80 million. It was a very poor step from a policies perspective and an expansion of government. It was the wrong direction, the wrong course from the beginning. From the reality of it is, it will be a failure, and it's already proved in the rollout that there were massive problems with the program from the beginning. Now, specifically to the 8 million number, it's safe to say that that has been grossly exaggerated. If you take, depending on what estimates you listen to, but if you subtract the number of people that were formerly insured and were just switched on to Obamacare, that number can very easily drop by 80%. And coupled with the fact that the people that were formerly insured now have their costs have went up, their choices are limited, and I think it's been proven true in many other cases that when the federal government takes over, they never run a program as effectively as the free market does.
And what should go in its place if Obamacare is repealed? What should be put in place to make up for those?
You know, there are a number of things that we could do from a free market perspective. I think it's probably from my perspective, it's a mistake to say that you're going to find an end-all, cure-all for what's wrong with our healthcare system. because you cannot deny that there are problems and the costs. But I do think there are a number of free market solutions that would have a dramatic impact. A few of those that I've talked about in the past are, you know, tort reform. I think our legal costs associated with the healthcare industry are enormous. I've carried legislation to help work toward tort reform. Healthcare savings plans, where we are allowed to keep more of our money and receive tax benefits to have responsibility for our own healthcare. My wife and I have done that in the past. You know, I think one of the biggest keys to turning this nation around is for people to reassume personal responsibility in the decisions they make. Another issue that separated me from former Governor Rounds, I've stated that we should allow competition across state lines between insurance companies, because that's a very legitimate free market solution that would both provide more flexible plans and more custom-made plans for the people buying those policies, but it would also drive the cost down.
Thank you. Given you mentioned former Governor Mike Rounds, given there are five candidates in this race, does this say anything about the Republican Party as a whole, where we're at right now? There's five people running for the Republican nomination. Is the party fractured? And what will it take to bring the party back together after the primary? And can you do that after the primary if you win the nomination?
Well, I believe that I can. And I think there are other people that will work in that direction. Obviously, some that have made public statements that indicate that they wouldn't work so well in that direction. I think that any of the Republican candidates would be a better option than what we've seen from the Democratic Party, because Rick Weiland has, in his policy stands, he's very much behind Obama in lockstep in many, many areas. And to be perfectly clear, I think that the vast majority of what's ailing our nation right now can be laid squarely at the feet of President Obama and his policies and his abuse of power through his judicial nominees, through his allowing the agencies like the EPA to ride roughshod over the American people, allowing them to legislate via regulation. And those are just a few of the issues that I have with Obama. So, again, back to your question, I think that any of the Republicans would be a better choice. Obviously, I feel that I'm the best choice among the five, and I'm the best equipped to work to make fundamental reform happen in Washington.
There are a lot of pundits and experts out there who more or less just consider Mike Rounds in this campaign the shoe-in. They just say, well, he's going to win the primary and probably win the November election, too. And I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Well, certainly Rounds has advantages simply by virtue of name ID. I always say the good news in South Dakota, you know, and I think probably and it would be true in a lot of other states more populated than South Dakota, that a guy like me would not stand a chance against a former two-term governor with that high a name ID. Fortunately, in South Dakota, name ID can be purchased relatively cheaply through the media. I always say, you know, I have to raise enough money to get my message out in statewide media, and second of all, the people like to they have to like my message. So I think we can do that. We've had great success, and as I've traveled across the state, when I get in front of people, we've been very well received, because I think people understand fundamentally that there needs to be some reform in the way we do business at the federal level. And it's not just enough, even among the Republican Party faithfuls. It's not, they realize it's not good enough just to send another Republican to Washington that will fade into the crowd. They need somebody with the backbone and the integrity and you know, the somebody that will take strong principled stands and stand strong on those principles.
I assume, as many others in the Republican race, you see the deficit as one of the primary issues. Is the deficit a concern to you?
Absolutely.
As well?
Debt and deficit both. You know, I think I've pledged to support a balanced budget amendment. I've also pledged that I would oppose any increase in raising of the debt limit unless it was tied to a balanced budget amendment, because I think that is just at the core of the problem. We have seen out-of-control spending and no real organizational effort to even address the debt and deficit. We have a massive economic engine in the United States. It's just begging to prosper. If the federal government would just get out of the way and quit expanding the size and scope of government and allow that economic engine to outgrow where we're at right now.
There are critics out there who point out that some of the biggest parts of our government are military spending and major subsidies to big corporations. How do you deal with those issues? Do you support cutting back some military spending or cutting back large subsidies to the wealthy if that is part of making government smaller?
Well, you know, on the military, that's a tough question. I have a long history of military service in my family, and a son that just finished is a Black Hawk pilot, my dad, my grandfather. I don't think, and I realize we have a huge amount of invested in our military. That's an investment worth making. But it's not to say that we can't be a lot more efficient than we have been. And I think that there are a lot of areas in a military that could be more efficient without downsizing our military. And, you know, I think that we need to we have a very poor foreign policy right now. I think that's another area that the current administration has been a colossal failure. I get asked what I do in Crimea right now in different areas, and, you know, it's hard to answer that because we have such a mess. We have lost credibility because of the current administration, so it's hard to play armchair quarterback and say what you would do at this point, because I don't believe a lot of those situations would be coming up if we had had a commander-in-chief that was competent. Obama has not been. So back to your question, you know, I think efficiencies in the military, we could find a great deal of savings. I think we need fundamental reform in all areas of government, because we've seen we should have, you know, we should continue to have compassion for the people that are in need, and honor the commitment the people that paid into Social Security. We should honor those commitments, but we should work toward eliminating some of the wasteful spending and some of the abuses of those systems that we see widespread, and then again, and I sound like a broken record, but again have been fostered and promoted by the Obama administration.
If I can ask another sort of political question on where this race is going, we have at least one independent candidate, maybe two or more, who are also planning to be on the ballot in November, Larry Pressler, of course, a former Republican U.S. Senator in South Dakota, very, very well known among a lot of folks in the state. Gordon Howey is potentially also going to be on the ballot as an independent. What do these independents mean for whoever wins the Republican nomination? Is it possible that this could fracture again the Republican Party in a way that gives the Democrat more advantage? Is that a concern at all?
Certainly, you know, there's anything's possible. But I'm pretty confident that whoever comes out of the Republican primary, well, I'm confident. I will say this: if I come out of the Republican primary as the winner, it will be because the Republicans in this state liked my message and thought that I was the best choice to promote fundamental change and reform in Washington and make things happen. And so I'm confident that if I win the primary, with that understanding, that I will have great success in the general. I won't speak for any of the other candidates.
Yeah, thank you. I want to also ask about the EB-5 issue, and many critics have been critical of both the Rounds and Dugard administration on this issue. Where do you stand on EB-5 if you were allowed to vote on it as a senator? Would you vote to continue the program forward? Do you think it's had more positive impacts or has it been more detrimental to the state of South Dakota given the current scandal?
Well, you know, I'll talk about the scandal versus the validity of the program, because I think, you know, they're kind of two different conversations. And I will say that I've been very reserved in making any judgments as far as, you know, the legitimacy. because there is an ongoing investigation. More and more information is coming to bear. I hope that, you know, that that all comes into focus prior to the primary, because I think it most definitely would hurt the Republican Party if there were information, you know, substantial information didn't come out until after the primary. Having said that, I think my opinion has been to hold judgment on you know, the enormity of it. I do think that it goes. I think at the minimum, we saw a pretty dramatic lack of oversight in the way that program was implemented, based on, you know, the facts that we have at hand right now. I won't make any further comment beyond that. But again, that is substantial in and of itself, that there was a very clear lack of oversight.
Other Republican candidates in the race have said that Mike Rounds shouldn't win the primary because of his vulnerability on this issue. Do you agree with that statement, that putting Mike Rounds electing him in the primary would be dangerous if he's still vulnerable and he'd be five after the primary is?
Well, you know, I kind of addressed that in my view, that I hope that the information comes out prior to the primary, so the cards are on the table prior to the time we vote in the primary.
I'm jumping around a little bit here. I hope it's okay.
Fine.
I'm curious about the issue of climate change. Where do you stand on climate change? Really happening? Is it man-made? And is it significant? Is it something we should be concerned about at all?
Well, you know what? My personal views are that, you know, I think in the history of our planet, there's always been climate change. It's kind of ironic in my mind, and I question. I do question some of the information, because if you recall, it wasn't just a couple few short years ago, it was global warming. When global warming no longer fit the description, they had to change the phraseology, and now it's climate change. And, you know, in order for a scientific theory to be legitimate, it has to have the ability to be be proven true, or B, proven false. The issue I have with the theory of climate change is there is no scientific theory that would prove it wrong. Everything that happens, if the planet cools, they call it climate change. If it warms, they call it climate change. If we have a hurricane, it's climate change. So, you know, I am fairly skeptical about that. But I will comment beyond that, because if you made the assumption, regardless of, you know, what your personal opinion was, if you made the assumption that, yes, we are going through climate change, and even if you took an additional assumption and says, yes, man has some effect on it in promoting that, I still think it's absolutely ridiculous, some of the proposals that we've conjured up in the United States to address it, you know, the carbon sequestration, the cap and trade. The first time I had somebody tell me what cap and trade and carbon sequestration is, I thought they were joking. I thought there had to be a more reasonable explanation, because it made no sense. As I became more informed, I was even more troubled that indeed was what they, you know, that they thought that was going to somehow help the situation by taxing corporations and make them pay to pollute. I've said, and it sounds a little coarse, but I think it's a good analogy, given the fact that we have China, who's building a new coal-fired power plant, about one a week, and we are taxing our own people into submission, and our energy costs are going up to pay for this climate change. I've said it's like creating a no-pee zone in a swimming pool, because that's no more effect than, you know, making all those assumptions. We still have not solved anything.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to add that I might be missing that we should be including in an interview like this, a story like this?
Well, you know, I would just say that it's been quite an experience. We knew that this was going to be a huge commitment to run for the U.S. Senate, and so we did a lot of soul searching. And I know one thing in my heart of hearts, that we're motivated for the right reasons, and that we're going to give this our best shot. And because I think there's too much at stake, and it would be a tremendous shame for a state like South Dakota to send somebody to Washington that would go there and blend into the background and not work toward making fundamental change in the way Washington operates.
Senator Larry Roden, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.